Well, I promised to say something about previous vestries of St. Peter's. This only time in this service to talk about the late 19th century one. I'm going to deal with the vestries from the 1940s on at 10:30. If you want to catch that story, go to the parish website and click on the podcast. Before I start the chronicle of some of these really interesting characters, I need to explain that colonial society was dynamic but chaotic. Or as my son said to me, probably Dunedin was a more interesting place to live in the late 19th century. My supervisor, John Stenhouse, has said that one of the demarcation points between the Anglican Church, or the Church of England and New Zealand as it called itself then, and the surrounding sea of Presbyterianism was its greater tolerance of the drink trade and of gambling, and that certainly comes out in the lives of the St. Peter's Vestry. Ephraim Machen, People's Warden in 1881, was the owner of the London Tavern in Walker Street, and later on he'd become the licensee of the Tramway Terminus Hotel in South Road. He died in 1885 at the age of 62. People tended to die young in colonial society too. Well, Frederick Carter had just been an office worker. He was on the vestry, and he won first prize in Tattersall's sweepstakes, so he bought the Red Lion Hotel and renamed it Tattersall's. He was a great aficionado of horse racing and dog racing. He owned both, and his dogs won several sweepstakes things. He would go on to become a hotel broker and land agent, and would die a respected member of Dunedin society in the 1930s. He's a member of the Caversham Band. I didn't know there was one. Edward Cochrane was a local brewer of some distinction. He was on the vestry too. Joseph Osmond was elected the mayor of South Dunedin in 1882, and a series of indignation meetings took place against him from 1883 on, against the stance he had taken on gas supply to the local area. Things became so heated that one Benjamin Throp was charged with assaulting and beating him that year. Well, it was a family life marked by tragedy. In 1903, his son committed suicide by drowning. Edward Royston had been originally a policeman, then a commission agent. He was declared a bankrupt. He discharged himself from that. That apparently wasn't a barrier to being on the vestry, but later repeated business failures, and he committed suicide in his own office, leaving a tearful note to his wife, who was holidaying up the coast. George Wollman wasn't on the vestry for very long, but he's interesting because he was a veteran of the Crimean War. He moved to Southland and became a policeman and a member of the Southland Hussars. I had not known that Southland had its own part-time cavalry regiment. The people who really stand out in this era, the decisive lay leaders of the parish, were of course Broderick and Esther. They're both born in East Yorkshire. You have to imagine them having regional accents. Broderick was born in Hull in 1825, and Esther in Richmond in 1842, and he was the son of a canon of Beverley Minster. Well, Broderick was really the financial saviour of this parish. It got itself into terrible debt problems over the building of this church. And he was really, he'd been a broker on the London Stock Exchange. He was an agent for the Panama Steamship Company. He got the Reuters agency when the cable first came to New Zealand. And he was the manager for the Dunedin Finance Loan and Agency Company. So he knew what to do. When a small business gets into trouble, you go and talk to your debtors and try and talk the debt down, try and win an extension of time, or try to create new debt instruments to move the debt away from your more demanding creditors. That meant persuading parishioners to take unsecured loans. Well, he really was, as I say, the saviour of the parish in that difficult time, but he died in 1896 at the age of 71. Despite the fact that he'd been so prominent in Dunedin business circles, he was only ever interested in the church and this parish, and that was just as well, given the amount of trouble it generated for him. Well, Esther had joined the Royal Navy as a cadet in 1856, and he rose to the rank of commander. I had not known that when General Cameron invaded the King Country in 1864, a naval flotilla accompanied the army, providing logistic and fire support. Well, it has to be said that Captain or Commander Esther did not cover himself in glory of this campaign. In one particular incident, he and some of his officers thought they'd sort of come out from the wheelhouse, which was armoured, and contemplate the the bank of the Waikato, whereupon some very accurate musket fire opened up and mortally wounded one of the officers. 6 days later, the ironclad gunboat he was in command of, the Avon, hit a snag and sank. That created considerable logistic difficulties for the army invading the King Country. In fact, they got diarrhea because of lack of adequate food supplies. However, he seems to have recovered quite well in civilian life. He became clerk to the House of Representatives in Wellington and then came down here to become cashier of the Union Steamship Company in 1878, a position he held for the rest of his life. He was a vestryman, a church warden for many years, a treasurer, a synodsman, member of standing committee. He was a kind of stabilising guy. People felt confidence in him, felt that he was really helping to add a bit of lustre to things. He's memorialised in this window here, and Esther Crescent is named after him. Just before I leave the late 19th century vestry, there's a most unusual case of what I call Chinese exceptionalism there, Mr. Leung Chung. We need to remember that the Chinese were the despised members at the lowest end of the social pecking order in 19th century Dunedin. They'd come here to take part in the gold rush, to be gold miners, and after that they came to South Dunedin in large numbers to be market gardeners. They'd come door to door selling their produce, and we actually owe them a debt of gratitude because with their little foot paddles, particularly in the area around Ings Avenue, they drained substantial parts of South Dunedin and made it possible for later housing settlements. Well, it was most unusual. I mean, the Chinese had to know their place, that Leung Chung was on the vestry. And what we think we know about him, he was a translator at the court when they were trying Chinese prisoners. He was claimed to be under training by Bishop Neville to be a missionary. We don't know if he ever became that. We think he was a merchant and that he may well have owned the Spanish restaurant in Princess Street. He's married to a European woman, and we know that he was something of a community leader because he was raising funds to repatriate a Chinese elderly gentleman at the Benevolent Institution Home for China. There were a few Chinese people in 19th century Dunedin society who lived between two worlds. They tended to be the merchants or people deeply involved in the churches. But they tended more towards the European side of things. He must have had a remarkable perspective on life, living between those two societies. I'm going to finally talk about an outstanding lay representative who was in the next generation of the church's life, and that's Lewis Deans Ritchie. Born in Roslyn, he tried farming and gold mining, came back to Dunedin in 1906, and rose through the ranks to become one of the most prominent and outstanding members of the Dunedin business community. He was a manager of John Reed and Sons, and a member of the Stock Exchange, Real Institute, so far. He actually became the Vice Chancellor of Otago University, and was a member of the Senate of the University of New Zealand. Remember, in those days, there's one University of New Zealand with branches, as it were, in all the major cities. But what's remarkable is that this man, who was so successful in business, an arch-capitalist, fell under the spell of and was deeply influenced by that Red Reverend Father Mortimer, the vicar here during the Great War. He had a degree in economics from Oxford. He was a graduate of St. Stephen's House, Oxford. A great exponent of guild socialism. He'd got himself a lot of notoriety from the Christchurch press in supporting the docker strike of 1913, I think it was. And yet, this arch-capitalist was deeply inspired by Mortimer and claimed that he was the inspiration of his life. Well, Lewis Deans Ritchie was synod's person for this parish from 1918 to 1942. He took his turn as church warden. He was on every significant diocesan body you can imagine. And when he died in 1942, he's memorialised by the gift of the altar and the reredos that were given in memory of him. And there's a brass plate remembering him too. Very significant person. Well, I'll pick up the story with the 1942 vestry at 10:30.